You've got to really be looking at the data in a very unbiased way in every aspect that you can.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
We're really having a very changing environment in pharma these days. One of the things that's changing is our customers have a lot of access to information. It's certainly a lot more than when I started in pharma. And importantly, because of companies like Uber and Amazon, they're expecting immediate and personalized responses. In terms of pharma, COVID accelerated digitization, but unfortunately, a lot of it was actually just digitizing existing processes. And I personally feel that this is not strategically enough for where we're going in the coming years. Our competition used to be just other pharma companies, but actually now we are competing against big tech. So for example, Google is now a pharma company and they have an R&D facility for drugs in San Francisco. Amazon is moving very heavily into healthcare and they want to be end-to-end, including drugs. My bet is that they're going to buy a pharma company. I would bet pounds to peanuts on that one. My guess is it's probably going to be a generics company to give them that competitive edge. So it will be interesting to see who they go for, whether it's Teva or Sandoz or where they go. And then new approaches. We have a lot of unique approaches that are being used in healthcare that I believe are going to reduce pharma's ability to compete. So let's take a little look at a few things. Firstly, a lot of these changes are fueled by artificial intelligence. I'll give you a little bit of a primer just in case you don't know what it's all about. So artificial intelligence is essentially the intersection between mathematics and computing. And so it's called artificial intelligence because it works a little bit like the brain in a human. So if you think about learning a new skill, like learning a language or learning to play tennis, the more you practice that skill, the more dendritic pathways form that make it easier for you to do that. And so it's a little bit like that with artificial intelligence. The more data that comes into the system, the more the system learns and becomes more accurate. Now, there's lots of different types of artificial intelligence, and they all have different uses. So, for example, there's you see the natural language processing. Any data that is language-based has to use natural language processing to understand it. Underneath that, we've got intelligent agents and utility-based agents. For example, for my meeting scheduling, I have Amy, and she's a bot. She's an intelligent agent. You can CC her in and tell her to, can you schedule this meeting? And then I don't see anything else, and she will email other people and check their calendars, check my calendar, and then schedule everything. So that's an example of a utility agent. In fact, she's so good that I often get people saying, can you thank Amy for me for organizing this? So, but if you asked her to do anything else, she wouldn't be able to. So it's just that. And then, of course, you would have heard about machine learning. So this is one of the big areas. There's lots of subtypes like decision trees, artificial neural networks, support vector machines. And then underneath those, there's different subtypes. So you can see deep learning there. You've probably heard a lot about that. Deep learning is very useful for image processing. So in our industry and in healthcare in general, for, looking at scans to predict illness or tumor progression or diagnose COVID, that's all using deep learning. But artificial neural networks have been around for a very long time. And with all of these, which one or which combination you use depends on the challenge you're trying to solve and the data that you've got to do it with. And so the data scientist involved in any project would make that decision of, well, we're going to use this combination because this is what we're doing. But the data is the most critical part. Well, I think the strategy first, then the data. And it's really critical that you go through a rigorous process when you're looking at what's the right data, how are we going to use it, because it goes wrong, horribly wrong, so often. For example, not that this was horribly wrong, but it's an example of bias. The British Army, about 30 years ago, were using artificial neural networks to detect whether there was an enemy tank in the woods. And so they took photos, and they were using artificial neural networks and deep learning. So they were taking photos of tanks in the woods, photos of camouflage tanks in the woods, photos of the woods with no tanks. And then they put it through these algorithms to see if it could predict when there'd be a tank in the woods. And it came out with, there'll only be a tank in the woods on a sunny day. Now, that was accurate because they only took photos of tanks in woods on sunny days, but it wasn't that useful. So it just shows you that you've got to really be looking at the data in a very unbiased way in every aspect that you can. And in fact, in any artificial intelligence project, the data component is the most critical, but also the most expensive part, because there's a lot of data, what we call data wrangling, which is, you know, sorting, structuring, cleaning, et cetera, that goes on. And then another more recent example was Amazon. They used a machine learning approach for recruitment. So they put in a lot of resumes of executives and then got the algorithm to basically do the HR function and decide which people to employ. And they, that was going quite well until they realized that they hadn't employed a woman for a very long time. And then they looked back at the data and they realized that the only resumes that they'd put in there were male resumes. So, you know, this, you've just got to be very, very careful with that data sampling. And you see that with a lot of the face recognition systems, you know, there's a lot of bias, racial bias and things like that going on. So basically that's the gist of it. It's really maths and computing, but it can do so much more than, and so much faster than we can as humans. So where is it in pharma and biotech? Well, it is everywhere. You know, we are using it for all sorts of things. So, for example, in discovery, it's used to discover new molecules, to design new drugs, although less so in pharma companies outside Moderna and more in AI companies. So there's quite a few AI companies doing this, and then pharma license it. So, for example, when COVID struck, there was two companies in particular. One was Diagen in South Korea, and the other was Benevolent AI. And both of them started to look at what is an existing FDA-approved drug that could treat COVID successfully. Diagen came up with atenosanavir, which is the HIV drug, and then Benevolent came up with baricitinib. What's interesting is I went back just before this to check how effective those two were. And both of them were effective against in treating COVID. But what was more interesting to me is the combination of those two actually was 30% faster in treating COVID. So that was really interesting. And then other companies like Iktos, SRI Biosciences actually have gone a different approach with COVID. And what they did is they screened, you know, many, many molecules to come up with new molecules that could treat COVID. So SRI, I think, got one in 4 days that they were able to have 10,000 molecules that were candidates, and they got it down to 100 in 4 days. And the other one, Iktos, they took about 1 to 2 weeks, a little bit longer, but they were able to design a new molecule and actually create it because they've got a synthetic chemistry platform as well. So that took 2 weeks. So that's really where pharma need to be going now, because instead of taking years to do something, AI can take weeks or months to do it. And in R&D as well, as you're actually doing your drug screening, repurposing, et cetera. Manufacturing, it's used for quality control, improving production, predictive maintenance. Clinical trial, you know, clinical trial design, recruitment. We've done this so many times for rare disease where pharma companies have had trouble finding patients. So, you know, we've done many projects just recruiting patients for rare disease. And automatic clinical study report writing. AI can write a clinical study report that is about 90% complete in less than an hour. Then in market access, we can use it for value pricing. We've used it for faster reimbursement and also for automated market access analytics. So for example, we had one client that had about 250 requests. They had all products every day from all the different brands about why this drug's, what's happening here, what's happening there. And let me just admit someone. And then they had a team in India, so they would send those requests to them to start analyzing, which would take a few days to a week each request. And it was really backlogged. But by actually putting it all into automated AI with natural language processing and machine learning so that you could put in a question in real language, the answers came up with visualization. So it was C-suite ready in 5 to 15 minutes. So that was a big game changer for that analytics team. Supply chain, you know, detection of counterfeits, warehouse automation, supply chain mapping, regulatory, collating daily guidance and regulations, medical intelligent literature monitoring, all sorts of things there. Sales and marketing, you know, precision doctor targeting, predicting which doctor's going to switch brands, suggestion engines, whispering agents. And then in marketing, all sorts of things, you know, key opinion leader identification, precision doctor targeting, predicting non-adherence and what needs to be done. We've done that with brands that have had nurse educators and brand ambassadors in call centers, doctor segmentation, predicting where the opportunity. We had one project for which was a blockbuster brand, and there were two pipeline brands where they were in exactly the same therapy area as the blockbuster. And so we needed to predict where should those two brands focus without cannibalizing the main brand. And that was very successful. Those two brands within the first year were over 2 billion in sales and didn't cannibalize the other one. So, you know, it's very powerful in every aspect in pharma and biotech throughout the value chain. Whoops. However, will it always be? So we've really got a changing world. So in the past, effective drugs took years to develop. Now we can actually identify molecules and create new drugs in weeks. In the past, clinical trials were trialed on humans. In the future, I'm not sure if it's being done that widely, but we will be able to do it on digital twins. I don't know if you know what a digital twin is. I'll just quickly explain just in case. So a digital twin is a digital copy of something. It started in the 60s with NASA. So they made a digital replica of the space station so that they, if something went wrong, they could find the problem and actually correct it. Then General Electric did it for one of their plants and exactly the same thing. But now we've got to the point where we actually have digital twins of human organs. So we have digital twins of hearts, digital twins of pancreas. And so eventually, and probably not in the too distant future, but certainly not in the next year or two, but within the next decade, we should be able to eventually have a digital twin of each person. So a little like in the old days with automotive, where if you did a car crash test, you would have to crash the actual car. Now it's all mathematical, so there's no crash testing. So it'll be a little like that. We actually will have a mathematical replica of different people. And so your digital twin can be tested the drug on them and you will see exactly what the results are. And then new medicines used to compete only against other pharma, but now we've got Google and really doing it. And we are also going to have Amazon for sure. Medicines were just manufactured traditionally, but now we have quite a few drugs that come with chip sensors. We've got drugs with a pill cam and they can be 3D printed. You know, Spiritam in 2015 was FDA approved and it was a 3D printed drug. So that will become more prevalent. In the old days, pills were just sold on their own. Now, in many cases, they are wrapped in value-added services and sometimes an ecosystem. And the value-added services are important to us because if you think about how payment is moving from just paper pill, but it's performance-based payment in many cases. So it's up to the pharma company to ensure that people take their drugs or they're not going to get paid because, you know, it doesn't work if someone doesn't take it. And then the thing that I find really interesting right now is the big markets like cancer and diabetes are probably going to reduce dramatically, because personalized diagnostics is really going to take off, and it's already taking off. And so that's going to reduce these markets dramatically, because we will be catching these conditions much sooner. So we have diagnostics in clothing, in the home. One of my friends is an architect, and she's designing homes that have a bathroom with a mirror that can detect any changes in the face and body that can be predictive of a particular condition. It also has a toilet that does urine and feces analyses each day to analyze conditions. So the home is becoming a diagnostic unit. We also have smartwatches. The phone will probably be where it goes, because that's where everything goes. But also there's a lot of experiments going on now with skin and digital tattoos on the skin to make diagnoses. So there's a lot of things going on here. I predict that this is going to really start to take off and reduce some of our big markets. So we as an industry need to start looking about how we can not be so reliant on just the drugs. And the other issue is, on top of these big markets, big therapy areas reducing, we have competitors that aren't drugs now. So for example, digital therapeutics. There are digital therapeutics that go into clinical trials and are just as effective and prescription-based as drugs with no side effects. We have nanobots that are being put into the bloodstream that are smaller than the width of a hair and can target cholesterol or target cancer. So these can be actually more effective and safe than a lot of tablets. And then the final point is that our model as an industry was, we just sell pills. But actually, there's a lot of new business models that really need to be considered, because I don't think just selling a pill is the model of the future. So, for example, there are pharma companies now integrating additional models. So, you know, you can be doing an ecosystem model like Amazon. Amazon started where they sold their books. Now anyone can become an Amazon seller and sell through Amazon, and they make a lot of money through that. More probably, I think I read somewhere, than their own books and their own things. So there are pharma companies that are doing the same thing. They're creating these ecosystems that other pharma companies are licensing, and they're making money in other ways. And I believe strongly that looking at integrating these other models on top of, you don't have to just suddenly change your business model. You can integrate the two simultaneously. And I think that's kind of the way that we need to go.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.